This is Elodie Reed, digital producer for Vermont Public Radio. This podcast has been edited for brevity and clarity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. When Governor Scott's Stay Home, Stay Safe order came down in March, it changed so much, including many intimate relationships. Back in April, we spoke with Chris Levesque and Christine Lebecki. They're married, and Chris lives in Quebec, while Christine lives in North Hero, Vermont. The closure of the border upended their normal routine of seeing one another on weekends.
I find it extremely difficult. Yes, there's positive things where, you know, it's funny, shortly before this all started, I was saying to my assistant that I'm always taking care of people. I'm always with people. I just really could use some time to myself, not realizing that I would get what I was asking for. But so I have had plenty of time on the weekends to myself because Chris and I have lived our lives on the weekends with one another. And so that's been a really interesting space of time to fill up with things that I'm doing for myself.
Christine told us the COVID crisis and the closure of the border had strengthened their resolve to move to the same place Chris has been planning to move to Vermont. We're joined this hour by Bruce Chalmer, a licensed psychologist based in Burlington who focuses on couples therapy. He's the author of Reigniting the Spark, Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back. Hi, Bruce. Nice to talk with you.
Well, nice to talk with you. Thanks for having me on.
So have you noticed a change in the couples that you work with or even new couples that you've been working with since the pandemic started?
You know, it was interesting early on because when the shutdown happened sort of mid-March, I guess. And so I switched completely over to telehealth at that point. And of course, at that point, there were quite a number of couples I had been working with in the office. And what I noticed over the course of the first few weeks was it kind of went in both directions, but the thing I remarked upon most in the first few weeks was couples that had been having a lot of difficulty, that had been making a little bit of progress, seemed to make a lot more progress, you know, almost counterintuitively. You know, the stress level was ramped up. They were dealing with kids that, you know, were stuck at home all day and having to school them and everything else. And yet they were somehow rising to the occasion, which I was really impressed with. I also did see some folks, you know, you take a situation and sort of ramp up the stress level to 11, and as they say, and it's not necessarily going to do wonders for people's dispositions. But so I have seen some people where it's increased their stress level. But I was really quite taken I was commenting to my wife quite a bit over the course of the first few weeks. I was saying, you know, all these couples I'm seeing that are doing better and almost seems like, you know, in the presence of a common adversary that they can't blame each other for, they really did pull together.
Have they been blaming somebody else or something else, the sort of the specter of COVID-19 maybe?
Yeah, well, we can laugh about that sometimes. I mean, occasionally I will ask people, you know, why haven't you fixed this yet? You know, and we will all chuckle around that. Obviously, none of us is capable of fixing this. And there is something There's something that is helpful, I think, in sort of a spiritual sense almost. There's something helpful to all of us recognizing this is way bigger than all of us. We're all part of something bigger. And that helps people pull together sometimes.
You know, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say it does tend to put things that people would get upset about in a different perspective when you introduce real life and death situations.
Yeah. I mean, you know, from my partner and I, my spouse and I, when we know we're going to face a stressful situation, we often can band together and say, look, this is going to be really hard, or this is going to be terrible, or our kids are being awful. Let's not be awful to each other and sort of agree to be in it together. And I imagine that maybe that's sort of the way it's worked for some couples, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic. But that gets harder the longer it lasts. And, you know,
yes, indeed.
As we look at month, whatever it is now, 5, and look ahead to the fall and, you know, for parents who live together, who are looking at an uncertain school year for their kids or who are looking at, you know, are we going to be able to have our jobs? I wonder, Bruce, if you see that sort of resolve to be together and to be unified fraying a little bit.
Yeah, certainly. And I suppose what the indicator in my own thinking about it is that thing I said I was saying quite a bit in the first few weeks, I guess I haven't been saying for the last month or two.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny as I think about it now. I guess no, I haven't been saying that recently. But part of that could just be because, first of all, I've got a bunch of people I've started seeing since that happened. And so, one of the things that's been interesting to me about that is I don't know, I'd have to really think case by case, and obviously I can't talk about individual cases, but I don't think there are too many folks that have come to see me where the pandemic is what pushed them over the edge, and that's why they're seeing me.
Hmm.
I think maybe there were some folks who were saying, well, now we better, actually, I think it's more the other way around. It's not that now we better act on this, it's that now we have time to act on this. We've been meaning to do this for ages, and we finally have, we're not going anywhere else, so we have a chance to actually do this.
So, right, and they can do it via telehealth. You don't even have to leave the house.
And I will tell you, if for me, and this I think this is partly related to where I happen to be in my career. I'm 69 years old. I love working, and I'm going to continue to work for as long as my brain lets me. But I was ready to give up the office for this, and did. I'm still affiliated with the group that I was affiliated with, but I actually stopped having an office there because I just went to telehealth entirely because it was so much more convenient for the folks I work with, and also for me, it really fits into my life very well too.
Hmm.
So that's been actually a factor in letting people do some work that they wouldn't have been able to do without the pandemic. So I suppose that's kind of a plus.
Annie is calling in from Essex Junction. Hi, Annie.
Hi, Jane. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I'd love to know what you're seeing in yourself or in your relationships or your friends' relationships.
Well, it has been a gnarly ride of a pandemic, I'm not going to lie, Jane. And I have had to sit with myself and look myself straight in the eye, because I had no other choice really. And I have somehow broken many relationships through the pandemic, but also I kind of needed to wrestle away from everything to get to myself. And so I've come out now the other side. Not obviously, I wish we were all coming out of the other side of the pandemic, but mm-hmm. for myself, wild ride that has been, oh my goodness, so soul shattering, and so I was so broken through the whole thing, but through it I've now become really confident with my voice and with what I want in life and what I want to do as I grow forward. And so I'm very humbled. I have felt humiliated. I have felt I've done some deep dives myself on what I can fix about me when I bumped into the relationships that got busted. And now I'll have to see who comes back toward me because I made a mess. So I'll have to see. My door's open for anything that's coming back toward me. But what I understand about myself now is that I'm more prepared than I ever have been to step out into the world and be in relationships because my relationship with myself is rock solid.
Annie, that sounds really powerful.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm in.
Yeah,
go ahead.
No, I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, I'm impressed that you've been doing that work and that you even through pain, you have found a way to feel more stable in your relationship with yourself and perhaps in what you want and need and can give in future relationships.
Well, I think the universe really helps. My children served me up a great deal of truth. They stood. I am proud of them. They served me a really strong truth, and that made me start working.
Annie, thank you so much for calling and for sharing that with us. I so appreciate it, and wish you the best of luck. And Bruce, you mentioned that some of the couples you work with have said, we finally have the time to work on this issue or this situation. And, it sounds that way for Annie, too. For many of us, having this isolation has forced us to have to do some introspective work, too.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. It was interesting how she was describing that, it's kind of a therapist cliche to note that in relationships, you really have to have a rock solid relationship with yourself to be okay in a relationship with someone else. And that's really what she was talking about, that, this crisis, and she wasn't going into detail, but the various crises of relationship that she was encountering that were really ramped up by this pandemic, it sounds like has pushed her to do a lot of really important work.
Yeah.
There's a way I like to think about the whole project of being in a couple, actually, that I think sort of applies here. Of course, when I say it, it sort of applies, you know, when what you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I have my favorite way of thinking about this. But we're all after two really important categories of need. We're after stability and we're after intimacy. And the reason I bother dividing things into those two categories is they're different skills that you need for those two things. And the skill of stability is often about finding ways of avoiding or lowering anxiety so that things feel stable and you don't feel like everything is, you know, the earth isn't moving under your feet. But intimacy isn't about that at all. Intimacy is actually about tolerating anxiety, not avoiding it. Because when you're in a relationship with someone, you may need to, you know, if you have something to say to someone that is important to you, that you think they're not going to like, or you just don't know if they're going to like it, that raises your own anxiety and it may well raise your partner's anxiety. So the willingness to do that involves a very mature ability to tolerate anxiety rather than getting rid of it. And the kind of thing that Annie was talking about, I think this pandemic, you know, nothing like a good crisis to teach you that you can tolerate some anxiety you didn't realize you could tolerate. And I think that may be a way that for a lot of people, what we're learning is we can be afraid and still keep going on. And that is a really important relationship skill.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. What a pleasure to hear from you, Annie. Let's talk to Jerry, who's calling in from Lincoln. Hi, Jerry. What about you?
Hey. Hi.
Hey.
I was hanging laundry.
Yes. Well, another important skill to be working on in the pandemic. What about relationships?
Well, I just thought of something that the gentleman said just a second ago about anxiety and facing that. And I just thought that, you know, we're four plus months out in this isolation. And people, you know, the stress level is increasing gradually for people. And I think for people, you know, reverting to trying to get into a relationship online, you know, people need to be careful. If anxiety and loneliness are driving them to a relationship, it's the wrong reason to pursue that. Because that's not a healthy way to enter a relationship, just to fill a void. So I think that might be happening a lot now with you know, this online dating evolving.
Hmm. And what about for you? Are you noticing anything different in your own life or relationships?
I've resorted back to the I used to serenade, like, under windows with the guitar and singing.
Uh-huh.
And that's pretty distant-free for someone on the second floor window listening. So it works pretty well. Like, I mean, my preference is like a brick and ivy building with the old ivy, and I used to climb up, and that was kind of interesting. But no, one woman I serenaded, she let her hair down, and I climbed up, and she had plugs in, so the hair fell out all halfway up, and I fell down. So you got to be careful of who you're dealing with that.
Yeah.
You know, online.
Yeah. No kidding, Jerry. Well, thank you for that. Yes, Bruce, serenading. And if not serenading, if you're not very good with a guitar, there may be other old-fashioned ways of sort of returning to previous norms. To, I mean, in some ways, add a little excitement to a dating life. You know, writing letters or having sort of a tension build without meeting one another face to face that you perhaps wouldn't have been forced to do previously in a dating life, but that could actually add to the excitement before you are able to meet someone.
It certainly could. Yeah, that's interesting. What is this writing letters thing? I've heard of that.
You know, right.
Sort of non-volatile memory approach, I believe. You put these marks on paper and it stays there even without power. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I have been hearing, and for people who have kids listening right now, we may talk about physical intimacy a little bit here in the show as well. But, you know, I've been hearing about people who are separated physically but emotionally bonded, who are doing more intimate things online with one another and finding that exciting, whether it's, you know, texting fantasies to one another or even pictures, that there are ways of sort of continuing to keep up a sexual chemistry even if you're not in the same place.
Oh yeah, there are ways these days that nobody could have even imagined, 10 or 15 years ago. Yeah, that's certainly happening. I was impressed with the guidance that the New York City Department of Health, I believe, mm-hmm. was issuing to people on how to have safe sex or safer sex in the presence of the pandemic. Because what was interesting about it, and I know I read some article about this, was that they were recognizing that people were going to want to do this and really feel the need to do this one way or another. And simply telling people, no, don't do that, it's not safe, wasn't going to work. So they found ways of describing, what are the actual risks involved? Can you catch it through various kinds of sexual activities? And if you're going to have sex, here's how to do it. So I thought that was really interesting that they recognized that reality.
Well, we actually got an email from a listener in Middlebury who says, considering the positive mental and physical effects of intimate contact, what do you advise for single Vermonters as we head back into the indoor season in terms of dating? How about people in open relationships with multiple partners? Many Vermonters are in this boat and wondering how to weigh the risks. So maybe we should take those separately. But first of all, as we head into the indoor season and, the weighing the risk versus the reward of intimate physical contact. Do you have advice, Bruce?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, simply to note that, wow, that's a great question. And would that we had wonderfully detailed guidance on exactly, what would be safe and what wouldn't be. It's all a matter of a continuum of risk. And, that it's an interesting phenomenon. I noticed this, and we don't even have to talk about sexual activity per se. The trust issues that happen now as different families decide which pod will they be in and can they trust all the other members of the pod? Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You've probably heard of that phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
And so you wonder, are you cheating on someone if you step outside the expectations of the pod? If somebody does something that would be a greater risk. That's very similar to the sort of thing people in polyamorous relationships have to deal with in dealing with, if you're going to have sex with multiple people. The worry is, is everybody being safe and how they do that? And the pandemic just makes that whole situation way more complicated and way more kinds of activities that might be risky. So, wow, in terms of advice, sex and not just sex, but physical intimacy and emotional intimacy are super important. They're every bit as much needs for us as wanting to feel that things are stable. So we need to do it. I'll tell you what comes to mind in terms of what people might do. My wife Judy Alexander and I have a podcast we've been doing called Couples Therapy in 7 Words. And we interviewed a sex therapist in New York City. Her name is Dr. Batsheva Marcus. And she also has a podcast, which I highly recommend. And she's known as the Orthodox sex guru, which sounds like Orthodox Jewish. It sounds like a contradiction in terms, but isn't at all.
Hmm.
And she talks about the importance of people experiencing pleasure and experiencing sex, whether or not they can be together. So, there are lots of ways that people can do that, and it's an important thing to be able to do. And maybe that challenges some people's sense of what they would have been willing to think about. Raises anxiety in that way. But what I recommend there is that people think about stuff maybe they haven't thought about. And that may be a way of providing for that kind of intimacy, that otherwise felt cut off.
Mm, and that could apply for single Vermonters who are dating and for polyamorous Vermonters.
Yes, absolutely.
Sharon is calling in from Brattleboro. Hi, Sharon.
Hi.
What's going on in your life?
I'm in the middle of dissolving a relationship. It's a 2-year relationship, and things really came to a head right around COVID time. I was seriously dating a man that has 2 children that he has partial custody of, and one of the exes had some sort of an incident that then resulted in him gaining emergency full-time custody of a 16-year-old daughter, which did not help our relationship at all.
Mm.
At the time we were living together, that's what we had decided to do during that time. And everybody kind of stayed in place for a while. And then when that came down, it's just created an instability for everybody, I think, that kind of blew things up. So it kind of brought everything to a head. And now we're kind of letting go.
Mm. Is that feeling okay, Sharon?
It helps to write a song about it. I wrote a song yesterday. That's the first song I ever wrote. So that's kind of an interesting, positive, creative outcome out of something that's kind of painful.
Yeah. Very painful. Sharon, that's so interesting. Thank you for sharing. I'm sorry you're going through that, and appreciate hearing that you're finding a creative outlet. And Bruce, I imagine, you know, one of the hard things about, I mean, one of the many hard things about dissolving a partnership is right now it may be harder to see your friends, to get that hug from a friend, to be able to sit on the couch with somebody else who you care about, to be able to talk about what's going on in your life. And that in some ways can sort of magnify the isolation of going through a breakup.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, certainly. You know, another thing that happens with breakups, I've noticed and noticed this more in the sort of more intense lockdown phase, was it wasn't really practical to split up. In other words, people wouldn't necessarily have anywhere they could get to. And that made it very difficult sometimes for people who had been having a whole lot of problems and had already pretty much decided to split up. And then, you know, maybe weren't sure. And then the lockdown happened and they couldn't figure out a way that they could physically move to separate places for a period of time. And that is really difficult.
Yeah. And worth acknowledging that there are people who are in unsafe situations who may also be not feeling either financially or just or like they have a place to go, who are experiencing that and maybe in worse positions than they were before the pandemic. So I just want to acknowledge that that's happening and not a good thing. While we're talking about this, let's go to John, who's calling in from Montreal. Hi, John. Go right ahead.
Hi. How are you?
We're okay. How about you?
Oh, I guess I'm coping.
What's going on in your life?
Well, actually, my situation is a bit similar than the lady that just called. Right before COVID started, I found out that my wife had been having an affair. We have three kids. And we've been married for 10 years, and we have been forced to keep on living together. And it has its set of problems, but I guess the reason that whole thing started was that we weren't communicating very well. Now we started communicating quite a bit, but it's still kind of this big mess that we can't get out of because we're forced to stay together for the time being.
Mm. John, boy, that sounds really challenging to you know, have thought about a separation or need a separation, have to have found out this really changing news, and now to have to continue living together. Bruce, I know you don't know John's situation intimately, but do you have advice for people who are in this kind of position?
You know, it's interesting that John already described, and John, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, you already described what I would call, from my perspective, obviously not knowing you, like, well, you've made some progress already in just recognizing that, you know, again, I don't want to assume this is true for you, but often affairs are an indication that there's been some kind of breakdown in intimacy with a couple. I'm not just talking about sexual intimacy, but, you know, some kind of connection has broken down, and affairs are often a symptom of that. And here you are stuck by COVID together. And you, I think you said you've been communicating a whole lot more than you ever did. You know, whether or not it's too late for your relationship, you'll have to figure out. But I was just impressed with the fact that you sort of recognized that fact that you're stuck, and so you're having to communicate. And there can be some value in that, whether you stay together or not. Hmm. The fact that, you know, you are parents of the same kids, and that will always be true. And so to the extent that this pandemic is forcing you to figure out, okay, how can you at least, you know, respect each other's basic humanity and communicate, even if you're having a hard time, there's probably some value in that, whether you stay together or not. I don't know, John, what do you think?
Well, I think you're right, because I think that I found out it caught me completely by surprise. And I guess now with a bit of looking back on it, we have found a way to communicate better, and I'm the kind of person that I would have probably just exploded emotionally and be very spiteful. And now that we have had the chance to talk about it, regardless of where it ends up, you know, we'll be able to at least tolerate each other.
Yeah, yeah.
With respect to the kids.
Yeah, John, boy, yeah, what a challenging situation, and I appreciate you sharing it with us. All of these stories, Bruce, it's illuminating to be able to understand what people are going through, and I think for many of us to feel some solidarity that a lot of people are finding changes, not all of them bad, not all of them good, but that, you know, a lot of people are navigating uncharted waters in their relationships right now.
Yeah, that is true. And, you know, I know it's a cliche that people are saying this, but we're all in this together. There's something about this that we can relate to everybody's struggle, because no matter how fortunate we may be or unfortunate, everybody's got some kind of struggle around this. And we can recognize that, you know, we're all experiencing loss and we're all experiencing fear. And that's that can be a powerful, you know, as I said, that's the basis for intimacy, is being willing to accept that and nevertheless connect. You know, I'll throw in another word that you know, we haven't mentioned yet, but it's a word that I often use. You know, I am not a religious therapist. I happen to be a religious person. I mean, I'm Jewish and I'm very actively Jewish, but I am not a fundamentalist in any way. But faith is crucial to this, and even independently of whether you're religious or not, the way I think about faith as, it's not that it's completely separate from religion, but it's not the same thing as religion. Faith is when you accept the rightness of reality, even when it's difficult.
Hmm.
That's how I think about it. And faith is what's going to get everybody through this. Faith is what takes fear and lets us act even though we're in fear. Faith is how you don't panic.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's called for in this. And I think, you know, a crisis like this can really elicit that from people, because we're all sort of forced to look at it.
Hmm. Yeah. And sort of faith in whatever form that takes for you.
Yeah, exactly. It's not necessarily the way I think of faith. It's not the same as belief. There are lots of different beliefs. I've known people that I think are profoundly people of faith, that I would say, who aren't at all religious in terms of participating in some particular religion. I've known people who are very religiously active that, with all due respect, I wouldn't consider people of faith. Fundamentalism itself, I consider the opposite of faith, oddly enough, because if you think there's only one right way of understanding things that are way beyond human understanding, clearly you're not accepting reality. And so to me, that is the opposite of faith. So what I've noted that I find very inspiring is the many ways that people deal with these very painful situations. And, you know, John's was a great example of that, where by finding this essential faith that there's something right about this, even when it's awful, you know, by right, I don't mean morally right. It doesn't sound like John was condoning his wife having an affair, but there was something meaningful about it. Because, I don't know these folks, but I'm guessing she's not crazy. She's not evil.
Mm-hmm.
And yet she did something that was, you know, clearly wrong and painful. But there must be something meaningful about it. That's an attitude of faith. That's what gets people through this.
Hmm. Let's hear from Brian, who's with us from Champlain, New York. Hi, Brian. What's your situation?
Well, I've been dating a woman in Canada for over a year. And it was actually exactly a year when the pandemic hit. So she's in Canada and I'm in the States, and we can't see each other. And well, we broke up after about a month into the pandemic, just for about a week or so before we learned to video chat. So then we started video chatting in May, and things have been going great. You know, we video chatted twice a day. But then Sunday evening, out of the blue, she broke up with me over the phone.
Yeah. How are you doing, Brian?
How do you feel?
You doing
not
okay?
Well.
Yeah, not well. Oh, Brian, I'm really sorry to hear about this. Bruce, do you have any thoughts for Brian?
Well, the same thought, Brian. Yeah, I'm really sorry. That's a very painful thing, and, you know, made all the harder by the fact that you're physically separate. You can't, you know, sit down and have some kind of conversation about it. It's, I would imagine that feels very, very painful. I'm sorry that you're going through that.
Let's go to Josh calling in from Brandon. Hi, Josh.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call. I am so sad to hear from your other callers. I've been listening for a while because my situation is completely different. I moved to Vermont a couple years ago with my wife and small children from a major city because I was gone most of the year. I missed major milestones, and every conversation that I had with my wife while I was on the road was about scheduling and was really tough. And so we would fight. But since we moved to Vermont, and even with COVID, which I lost, both of us lost our jobs, we financially are in not great shape. But it turns out that all we wanted all along was to be together. And so we got that. And so we're actually having a wonderful time with our kids and with each other. And so I just wanted to say that I so appreciate and feel for your other callers, but personally, my wife and I are in the best part of our relationship that we've been in for 7 years.
Wow, Josh, that's wonderful to hear. And I'm sorry to hear that you have both lost your jobs, and impressed that you're still able to not only experience but to recognize this wonderful aspect to your relationship and this ability to be together, and that that's wonderful and pleasant for you, even with all of you together and your kids, and that wasn't a situation you experienced in the same way before. Josh, thank you very much for sharing that with us. Let's go to Joanna in Burlington. Hi, Joanna. What about for you? What are you experiencing?
Hi, Jane. Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we can.
Okay. I think it seems that the assumption is that spouses are both having the same shared experience because they're both in isolation at home together. But I think it's important to remember that that's not always the case. My spouse has continued to work from home, going on month 5 now. He works for a company that supports remote work. I, however, do not. I work for a company that whose business philosophy is that work should occur 100% in the office. So I've been back in the office for a long time. And I think it's important to remember that spouses aren't having shared experiences. He's been in isolation for 5 months, and I've been back to a normal life for a really long time. So we are experiencing very different emotions during the pandemic because our situations are really very different.
Joanna, how does, if you don't mind sharing, how does that affect your relationship when you are experiencing such different things?
Well, because I've been out in the world every day for 3 months now, I'm pretty comfortable functioning out in the world, in a large office with lots of people. I work in human resources, so I have a lot of contact with a lot of people. And my husband does not. So I think he still has a bit of paranoia about COVID, a lack of confidence functioning out in the real world right now, whereas I reached that place a long time ago. So I think we just may be on different pages right now.
Yeah. Joanna, thank you. Thanks for sharing a little bit about your situation, but also for that reminder of, you know, a lot of different kinds of situations. And yeah, I agree. In my case, both my husband and I have been working at our place of businesses all the way through this. So yeah, none of us are necessarily experiencing exactly the same thing. And even within couples and within families, there may be very different experiences of the world. So thank you. I appreciate that. We got a note from Jeff in Montpelier who wrote in to say, my wife lives in Quebec and I haven't seen her since early March. She's flying into Boston on Saturday because the land border remains closed. What a weird world we live in. And boy, Bruce, yeah, to be married to someone in Quebec, but in order to see one another, she's going to have to fly to Boston to get into the country. That is a unique experience.
It is, and well, what a world we live in. And I wish there were some way that didn't have to be true. Do you know what I mean? If it's okay for her to come in the country, I wish there were some way that they could have a procedure at the border where they would know who's allowed to come in and they would let her in and she wouldn't have to go all the way to Boston. But that's apparently the way it is. It was interesting on what Joanna was talking about. I think it's really worth underlining. I think she made a great point. That assumption, you know, it's kind of the counterpoint to that. I mentioned the sort of cliche that we're all in this together.
Mm-hmm.
And she's pointing out, well, yeah, we're all in this together, but we're not all experiencing it the same way. And there are large differences, as you said, even within a couple. on how people experience it. And that can bring forth some stress. That can be hard. You know, that reminds me a lot, actually, of the situation of a lot of couples anyway, independently of the pandemic, where maybe one person is working out of the home and the other person's working in the home, either, you know, primarily doing childcare or working out of their home or whatever it may be. And those experiences, you know, what they need from each other, what they want from each other, you know, somebody comes home after dealing with people all day and maybe just wants some quiet, and the other person's been alone all day and really needs some social interaction. And that stuff can be tricky to navigate.
Yeah. And we haven't talked a lot about kids, but kids can be both wonderful and an extreme stressor. And, you know, if there are couples who are trying to do childcare together, but one person is working outside the home, or one person is not doing as much of the childcare while another one is really shouldering that burden or is trying to work and shoulder that burden, that can create a ton of stress individual, but also in the relationship.
Yeah, and that has come up quite a bit in sessions I've had with folks, that phenomenon where, you know, they're both working jobs, but one of them is at home and still trying to do schooling or childcare or whatever it may be, and juggling all that. And that can be really difficult for both parties, especially the one who's at home. And, you know, the person, really, I've seen all kinds of variations on the theme where the person coming home may have been through a very stressful day as well in their work situation. And it really can make things difficult.
Yeah, I recommend listening to an On Point from earlier this week where Meghna Chakrabarty was talking about motherhood, modern motherhood, but also particularly in this moment, motherhood, and some of the statistics around women taking on more of the burden for childcare even now while working, and even in some cases while more than one partner is at home. It was really interesting. Go back and find that if you're interested and have the time. We got a note from Jimmy who says, my elderly parents' relationship is stronger than any I've seen, but the forced isolation has been extremely hard on them. They need more time apart, but we can't figure out how to be safe. What do you think, Bruce, about, you know, trying to find ways to be apart? You know, Jimmy was saying, my elderly parents love each other, but they need some space, and we need to figure out a way to do that. How can people get some space from one another if that's the situation they're in?
Well, you know, by asking the question, it's, I don't know specifically. It really depends on the situation. I've heard, it's funny, the one that pops in my mind is actually several couples that have commented on their sex life, how difficult it is because they never have a break from their kids.
Mm-hmm.
And similarly, you know, for people to get breaks from each other, particularly if he's dealing, you're talking about Jimmy dealing with elderly parents, you have to figure out what's safe, what's allowable. I don't know what situation his parents are living in. They may be living in, you know, if they were living in some kind of, you know, elder care type facility where there are rules that say, no, you can't leave and you can't, you know, you can only have very limited visitation. That is very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, everybody has to figure out as well as they can what kind of risk they're comfortable with. And then maybe it's possible, you know, if they're comfortable taking some kind of risk of leaving the house, then, you know, maybe he can take one of his parents out and let the other one have a little break or something. It's not a situation that has ready-made solutions. We all have to figure out what works for us.
Yeah, we're finding not a romantic partnership, but for my two children, they have spent so much time together that I think they need a break from each other. And that's difficult, too, to try to give anybody who's living in a household together who is feeling the strain of being together all the time to be able to find that space for different members of the family to be able to get time alone. It's just difficult. It's really challenging.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed.
Let's go to Tim in Richmond. Hi, Tim.
Hi. Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yeah. Go right ahead.
So my wife and I are both self-employed, two young children, 4 and 2. And certainly the pandemic has underscored something that seems to be thematic for many relationships, which is to just remember that everybody gets to where they are at the point in their life on different paths, and that people think very different ways and they arrive to this however they arrive to it. And I think it's incumbent upon us in partnerships to give each other the space to handle this as we know how and with our coping mechanisms, because everybody does deal with it so tremendously differently. So I think, you know, that's one of the ways that we've been able to grow through this space is to you know, observe each other and give each other the opportunity to experience it in their individual way, but interdependently together.
Hmm. Yeah, Matt, thank you very much for that. I appreciate that perspective and insight. Let's get another call in here from Laura. Laura's calling in from Burlington. Hi, Laura. Go right ahead.
Hi, Jane. I think as a single young professional living in the city, it was interesting navigating sort of the dating culture during COVID as things move more towards online dating and social media dating apps. And, you know, I definitely had my share of conversations virtually with folks during the pandemic's peak. And it was tough to know, like, should we make plans to plan something socially distant outside, or, you know, should I hang, like, just wait and not meet these people for a while? It was very hard to decide what was the mature and responsible thing to do while also feeling incredibly lonely and isolated at times, like so many people have expressed, and just kind of having to make that judgment for myself and not feel judged by too many other people for what I decided to do.
Yeah, Laura, was it one of those, was it a difficult conversation to broach about, like, where do you and the other person stand on meeting in person or not? I mean, how did you even broach that topic?
I feel like a lot of times people were pretty upfront about it and just like, you know, what's your comfort level, or like, would you want to, you know, go for a picnic or a walk or something outside? And a lot of times people were pretty comfortable with it. At least me having a roommate, too, I just had to make sure I was on the same page with her. And we were, luckily, that we both felt comfortable meeting folks outside of the home. It's really interesting just because I have been seeing someone now for about a month. And I don't want my other friends to judge me for, like, welcoming a somewhat stranger into my now, like, quarantine circle. So,
do you feel judged? Are they judging you?
What's that?
Do you feel judged? Do you find that they are judging you?
I definitely feel like some people who are still quarantining very seriously are very skeptical or just wary when I say that I've been hanging out, you know, in close proximity with someone, you know, staying at their home and they're staying at my home and vice versa. And it's been tough, I think. So. Hmm.
Well, you know, I'm glad to hear that it sounds like you're finding happiness with this new person, and that's very cool. And thanks for sharing that. I'm glad to get your perspective. You know, Bruce, we were talking about pods earlier, and it sounds like, you know, Laura has invited this person into her pod in some ways, and that exposure budget, as Dr. Levine calls it in Vermont, is something that many of us are thinking about in many different kinds of relationships, how much time we're going to spend with people and who those people are. And it's challenging in a lot of different ways to have clear communication about our boundaries and our relationships, but perhaps something that we're all getting a lot more practice in right now.
I think we are. It's a new trust issue. You know, it's things we never used to have to think about, but it becomes, you know, can I trust this person to adhere to the guidelines that we agreed upon, or, you know, what do I do if they didn't? It's really tricky stuff.
Any advice going back to the very first caller we spoke with, and this idea of working hard on ourselves and maybe addressing isolation if that's what some people are experiencing?
Yeah, I not to boil things down to my simple formula, but I have a simple formula. It's what that podcast I mentioned, that we call it Couples Therapy in 7 Words. It's based on a 7-word formula, which is actually what my book is based on as well. And the 7 words, I'll spare people the 7 or 8 minutes of YouTube video to find it. The 7 words are be kind, don't panic, and have faith. And they're connected. You can't be kind if you're in a panic, and the antidote to panic is faith. And so that's, you know, that's kind of what we all have to do to address all of these various things. I realize those are very general terms, but that's sort of the answer to feeling lonely. It's the answer to a lot of stuff. It's like, it's funny. I'm going to quote, I'm not a 12-step person, but 12-step will say things like accept life on life's terms. That's a statement of faith.
Well, I love it. It's a great, great sort of mantra to end on. Be kind, don't panic, and have faith. Bruce Chalmer is a Burlington-based psychologist, and his book is called Reigniting the Spark, Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back. Bruce, thank you. What a pleasure to talk with you this hour.
Well, thanks, Jane. I've really enjoyed this. I'm a great fan of yours.
Oh, thank you very much.